On haddock first, and then cod and yellowtail, and I have a motion after each one. Last year I gave one big motion, and this year I'm going to do it species by species so that, in fact, we can clear the decks a little bit. And then at the end, Chris mentioned a little bit that there was a summary of the size composition analysis, and we should mention that if we have any energy left at the end of the TMGC meeting. My first comment is that NIMS had aliasing of an unknown mechanism. I might need aliasing of a known mechanism after this report. The TMGC guidance document is in the under the groundfish tab, tab 3, and it's document number 7. And haddock begins on page 3 of that document. The 2005 catches of haddock in the U.S.-Canada sharing area were 15,100 metric tons. The U.S. had a quota of 7,600 metric tons, of which we caught 569 metric tons. The Canadian quota was 15,400, of which they caught about 14,500 metric tons. And as we all know, the U.S. access was closed off because the U.S. cod quota was reached in the area, which shut down the fishery because of bycatch. The F in the fishery for this area in 2005 was 0.29, slightly above the F reference level of 0.26. And as Ralph said, resource productivity in recent years was reduced because of the size at age problem, which he explained much better than I can. And as a consequence of all that information, the TMGC recommended a TAC of 19,000 metric tons. Assuming the 2006 catch of 22 would be equal to the 22,000 metric ton TAC, this would result in a neutral risk of exceeding FREF. But it's important to note that we are unlikely to catch the 2006 TAC because of our fishery being limited by the cod catch as it was in 2005. And in the document, it doesn't talk about biomass risks, or I didn't, because it said the risk of biomass decline is not pertinent because biomass is currently the highest in the assessment series. A 19,000 metric ton quota would be divided between the U.S. and Canada, 67% for Canada, 33% for the U.S., with a resultant tax, a U.S. TAC of 6,270 metric tons and a Canadian TAC of 12,730 metric tons. Mr. Chairman, do you want me to put a motion up, and then we'll discuss the recommendation?
Please.
I have a committee motion, and that is that the 2007 Eastern Georges Bank U.S.-Canada haddock total allowable catch be set at 19,000 metric tons with a U.S. share of 6,270 metric tons, 33%, and a Canada share of 12,730, which is 67%.
Okay, and that's the committee motion, so
that is correct.
It doesn't require a second discussion. No discussion from the council. Any comment from the audience? Okay. We'll come back to the council then. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion on the board, please raise your hand. Nine. Opposed? Abstentions? Two abstentions. Motion carries. Okay, George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this rate, we'll be done at 4:20. The Eastern Georges Bank Canada, or cod rather, is next. That is in, again, groundfish document number 7, and it's on page 1. The combined 2005 U.S.-Canada catch was 1,200 metric tons, which included 407 metric tons of discards. Adult biomass was 16,300 metric tons at the beginning of 2006. The fishing mortality rate has declined to F equals 0.1, which is well below the F reference of 0.18. Resource productivity is low due to poor recruitment and reduced weight at age. The report says that a 2007 catch of 2,700 metric tons would result in a neutral risk of exceeding FREF. The TMGC chose a recommendation of 1,900 metric tons, which results in less than a 25% probability of exceeding FREF. The tack level results in about a 60% chance of a nominal decline in biomass. This was chosen because of the number well below 2,700 metric tons because of the reliance of the fishery on the 2003 year class and wanting to shepherd that through to hopefully get another good year class. A tack of 1,900 metric tons would be divided between the U.S. and Canada, 26% to the U.S., 74% to Canada, resulting in a U.S. share of the tack of 494 metric tons and a Canadian share of 1,406 metric tons. And I have a motion from the committee, and that's that the 2007 Eastern Georges Bank U.S.-Canada cod total allowable catch be set at 1,900 metric tons with a U.S. share of 494 metric tons, which is 26%, and a Canada share of 1,406 metric tons, which is 74%.
Okay, that's a motion from the committee. It doesn't require a second. Discussion from the council. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, before I vote on this, George, I'd like a status report, so to speak. It's my understanding that in 2005, the Canadians had an overage of their cod quota. They were about 200 metric tons over. Do you know what the disposition of that overage was? Were they penalized for that overage in any way? Because if they weren't, and I don't think they were, it makes me uneasy with this whole agreement if they're not paying any penalty for overages.
My understanding, and that's a good question, is that they weren't in this case held responsible for the overage because they didn't have a mechanism of dealing with it as we did, and that they've corrected that, and they would be they will, if there's an overage this year, be able to take that off the next year's tack, David.
So they were forgiven the overage of 200 metric tons?
Which
is a pretty large amount, considering the amount that was allocated to them. We had around 400 metric tons. That was 2005. Their quota was 700 metric tons, and they had an overage of 200 metric tons, and that was forgiven because they didn't have a mechanism to account for it, to penalize.
Okay. For folks who are at the U.S.-Canada meeting, is that not the correct interpretation?
Tom, you want to come up and add some clarity?
I don't know if I can add clarity, but I can repeat the explanation we were given at the U.S.-Canada meeting. We questioned that at the U.S.-Canada meeting, and the explanation was that the Canadians, as you know, have an ITQ system. They had not given an allocation to their scallopers in 2005. And the reason they went over on the cod overage is primarily because of discards by their scallop fleet. And they felt it was unfair to penalize their groundfish fishermen for discards by the scallop fleet. Supposedly, this was broached at a steering committee meeting and was agreed to by Neil Bellefontaine and the regional administrator that they would not be penalized in 2005 for the 2005 overage. Now, at this time, they are, I believe, giving an allocation to their scallop fishery so okay. that they have a way to penalize the scallop fleet if they are the ones who cause overages in the future.
Okay, frankly, I'm not sympathetic. There were 200 metric tons over. It should have been accounted for in some way. And through these agreements, I would have expected that that our side would have argued for, even this year, 200 metric tons to be taken off the top, something to compensate for that overage. Because it hasn't been accounted for, I'm very hesitant to support this motion.
In fact, the U.S. side did argue for that, David, and was given the explanation that Tom just raised, and we are it is our intention to have a meeting between this year's meeting and next to discuss the issue of overage coverage so that, in fact, there's a much clearer understanding in the future.
Another point to make on that issue of overages is that at this point, if there were to be an overage this year, it wouldn't be until 2 years later that the Canadian side could make a reduction or account for it as a function of their bycatch reporting and when they actually allocate out their quota. At least I believe that was the explanation we were given. So at this time, it would take an additional year. Dave.
Yeah, I actually had a question. I guess it would probably be for George. I think Pat explained at one of our previous meetings that we had to meet the rebuilding targets for this stock irregardless. In other words, if the Canadians were over, we got to take a bigger hit because they went over. Is that still true? I mean, are we paying a penalty here because somebody else couldn't manage their fishery?
In a numerical sense, I think you're correct. And it'll become, I think, more clear when we discuss yellowtail about the fact that we have set, the set targets in, I sometimes lose track whether it's Framework 42 or Amendment 13, but targets we cannot exceed. And so for the amount that there are overages, we all pay a penalty thereafter. Ours are more set by law and regulation.
Okay. Well, my question, I got to remember, we have two Georges here today. My question was actually for George Darcy. I thank you for your explanation.
How'd I do, George?
George LaPointe. But I just want to know if there is, I think he answered the question, but.
I wasn't at that meeting, so I can't tell you what Pat said, but I mean, typically that is the agency's response. We're responsible under the law for not overfishing our fisheries, and we have to deal with what we have control of. It doesn't really make sense to overfish to get even. So I imagine she probably did say that.
Okay, so what we're being asked to do here is to penalize our fishery because of somebody else's management problem. And I have a pretty hard time swallowing that one. I mean, I have a hard time voting for something that doesn't keep this equitable. And I'm going to put that right out there up front.
George, did you want to respond to that?
The year where the overage was 2,000 or 200 metric tons, that's certainly the case. And the Canadians have made an adjustment. So I don't know what else we can do at this point, but acknowledge that it's there.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, John. This seems like too big a bite to me. I note that this will have a greater than 50% probability of leading to a biomass decrease, and it seems to me that that's not a prudent thing to do when your only chance for rebuilding is the 2003 year class, which has two of the weakest year classes on either side of it. So it seems to me that this is too big a bite at this time. I'm not going to move to amend. I'd like to hear some more discussion, but I'm not ready to support this one.
Rodney.
Yeah, I agree with David, and I don't want to take anything away from our team because I think they do the best they can. But if we entered an agreement where just one side of it, they get their feet held to the fire and the other side can overfish, and from what I just heard from you, Mr. Chairman, it may look like if they go over it this year, it would be two more years before they could adjust that. I think we need to negotiate a different agreement. I've been into some of them agreements.
Anyone else on the council? Tom?
Yeah, with respect to the, I forget the percentage, but the risk of biomass decline with this 1,900 metric tons, I think Ralph might be able to provide some information on the size of the biomass decline, I think. You know, one of the problems with those risk curves is they tell you what the risk is of a decline, but they don't tell you the magnitude of the decline. So you don't know if it's a 10% chance of a huge decline or a 10% chance of a large decline, but I think Ralph can answer that.
Yeah, I know. It's characterized as nominal, and the people say, well, what's nominal? But it's really only in the range of hundreds of tons, okay? So we're talking about declines from total biomass or adult biomass in the range of 19,000 tons. Over a five-year period, it might be a total of 1,000. Some of that might actually be inevitable. So this risk of this what appears to be very high, large shift from 2,900 with a neutral risk of exceeding FRF to a 1,500 metric tons to a risk-neutral situation of no change in biomass. I mean, that's 1,400 tons. But the actual decline at that risk-neutral point is really only in the range of 100 tons or so. So it is very small. It's a very flat surface at this point. I guess that's the way it's described. And I would remind people while we're talking about this that In 2005, despite the overage that people are talking about, F was down to 0.1, half of the reference point almost. So for whatever reason, some of it perhaps, no, I wouldn't even say it's the 2003 year class, just the fact that the stock had built up a bit. Catches had been low, set at a relatively low level. So just a reminder, F was well below the reference point in 2005.
Tom Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to be sure. I have a suggestion. I don't know whether it has merit, but before I offer it, I want to be sure. My recollection is the 26% spread, the allocation that is given to the United States, that's the agreed allocation number. Is that correct? That's the...
The allocation changes based on landings and survey abundance, is it? And so they're adjusted. I don't have the table. Well, I have the table with me. It's in a heap of papers.
Okay.
To know, it makes minor adjustments, but it's based on history and surveys and catch.
Right. It seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that as much as I agree that from a diplomatic standpoint, it's probably appropriate to not suggest to the Canadians that they do something that they can't do. On the other hand, I don't think it's appropriate that we just ignore the fact that we'd be required to deal with it. And it seems to me that in some way there ought to be some acknowledgement that they basically, in the agreement that we have, they've caught some of our fish. This codfish stock is critical as a bycatch, if nothing else, for us to be able to prosecute the haddock fishery. And by them going over 200 metric tons, it basically affects the total yield this year. The impact of them going over is that it has an impact in the allocation the following year, regardless of the stock shrinking. Why the fact that those 200 tons disappeared out of the ocean materially affected the 494, it's not the percentage, but it's the volume of pounds or tonnage that we're given this year. And I would encourage us to think about sending a letter to the Canadians asking them to change the percentage this year in terms of the allocation to the U.S. to reflect the fact that they went over last year so that, in fact, they are compensating for the 200 tons that they went over. They'd be giving them back to – it isn't 200 tons that would come to the United States. It would be a percentage of that would come back to the U.S., and it would be very helpful for us to be able to prosecute the haddock fishery. So I think it – I agree with the speakers that I don't think we can let it be left unsaid. And my suggestion is, in fact, that they change the – sharing percentage this year to shift a percentage of the allocation to the U.S. that would change our 494 metric tons. I don't know what the number is because I'm not fast enough on my feet, and see what they say. We don't have anything to lose, and I think it's a fair thing to do, because if we were over, we would be required to make the change. If we were over, it comes off of the next year's allocation. In fact, we're not allowed to go over. So it seems to me that there's a disconnect here between, let's say, ours is 494 metric tons this year. They were over by two, so they caught 50% of our, or two, what is it, 40% of our total allocation this year. They went over by last year, and I don't think that should be left unnoted.
Okay. Dick.
Is there any way of knowing what this will cost us in terms of lost haddock fishery?
John.
Even in round numbers, roughly?
In round numbers, our haddock quota the last year, I remember, was like 7,600 metric tons, and we caught 500. So it cost us 500 divided by that. We caught less than 10% of our haddock quota because of the cod fishery having it shut down. So we left 90% in the water, and I don't know the exact percentage this year, but it will be a large percentage.
It could have increased the haddock yield around 50% if we had that extra 200 tons. Anyone else on the council? Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. Maggie. Gotcha, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this issue of the overage, Tom Neese indicated that this was primarily a discard in the scallop fishery and that there was no mechanism to allocate fish at this time to that fishery for bycatch. I guess this is for George. In our negotiations with the Canadians, do we have any influence over them about gear changes that could potentially mitigate some of this discard in the scallop fishery?
That's not something we've discussed at the TMGC. You know, in the TMGC, the U.S. and Canada meet regularly about the shared fisheries, and so that could occur there, but it hasn't been discussed.
I think Tom has some. Okay.
George?
Doug just told me he was briefed on the meeting, and apparently Pat has offered the Canadians to share with them the twine top research that we've done in our scallop fishery to see if it works for them in terms of reducing finfish bycatch.
I believe that the requirement right now is around a 4-inch twine top in the scallop fishery. Tom?
Yeah, I provided that research. Ron Smallowitz gave me a copy of that, I think, 2 years ago, and I provided that to the Canadians. And their DFO has broached the subject with their scallop industry, and to date their scallop industry has just been very resistant to apply it. They argue that for a variety of reasons they don't think the research is applicable to their scallop fishery, and they claim that they lose too many scallops when they try and use the larger twine top.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, if the council does indeed communicate further to the Canadians on this issue of the overage, I would hope that we would reiterate that recommendation, that they try to do something to mitigate the bycatch and discard in the scallop fishery through gear changes. Thank you.
To that point, George?
To that point, I think I mentioned briefly that, in fact, we were going to meet with the TMGC in what's called an intersessional to deal with the issue of overages, and that could certainly be something we discussed during that meeting.
Okay. Dave Borden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and since it's the first time I'm at the mic, congratulations. David Borden, Mass Marine Fisheries, Massachusetts Fisheries Institute. Three quick points. Having had a minor role in formalizing the agreement, the agreement's clear. If there's an overage the following year or at the next available opportunity, the overage comes off. There's no ambiguity as far as that is concerned. The only issue that remained unresolved was if it was a substantial, very substantial overage. Then we talked about there should be a penalty that should be assessed in addition to the overage. So this isn't a case where it's ambiguous. This is simply a case where you've got to follow the terms of the agreement. Number two, there's no provision in the understanding, and it's an understanding, it's not a negotiated agreement. There's no provision in the understanding to forgive overages. There's no authority for anyone to forgive overages. In other words, there's a role for this council. The role for this council is you have the TMGC that goes and negotiates it. They basically bring it back. The council gets to formalize advice on it. But no one has the authority to unilaterally forgive overages. Third and final point is Tom Hill is correct in terms of how this would affect subsequent years. Any underage by a country essentially goes right back into the pot. And then you do the splits according to the understanding. So what happens is, everything else being equal, the amount of quota you're going to catch the following year is going to go up. So he is absolutely correct. This deprives the U.S. of quota in the following year. The strategy that he offered, I would just make the comment, is a good way to affect this, affect the compensation mechanism. In other words, if you remand this back to the committee, the committee can go back and say, this is unacceptable, and as far as we're concerned, we want those 200 tons to come out of the Canadian share, a one-year agreement, that's what he was proposing, take the 200 tons out of the Canadian allocation this year, add it to the U.S. allocation. Thank you very much.
Rich Canastra.
Rich Canastra, Whalen City Auction, New Bedford. First of all, I have to state that I don't understand the agreement, and I don't agree on the understanding, and I just don't understand where we are today. 200 metric ton that we're going to forgive, and Mr. Darcy, I believe you said that Pat met with them, and they're going to forgive him for that 200,000 metric ton, or someone said that they were going to forgive him for it. Come on, guys, where are we here? If we let this go through, shame on us. Shame on us. This isn't an agreement. It's not an understanding. I don't understand it. I don't agree on the understanding. I don't believe that people know where we are on this. Number one, the scallop is their scallop and fleet. They're not shut down if they go over a quota. They don't get shut down. Our scallop and fleet does. Our scallopers work with a 7-inch twine top, a 10-inch, sorry. There's a 4. There's a big difference there. There's also a big difference on the dragger end and what they're fishing with and what we're fishing with. How can we agree or understand to agree when apples aren't with apples? These aren't even oranges and apples. They're bananas and apples. I think it's time for us today to put our foot down and say, we don't accept this understanding. And furthermore, I was at the TMGC meeting in Portland, and there was talk about 1,650 metric ton, and it was brought up at 1,500. And no matter what it is or how TMGC would work for us, and if they got us 2,000 metric ton, it doesn't matter because the steering committee and Ms. Kirkle has the final say. So all of this is a waste of time. It's a waste of time going to these meetings when you don't have the final say. They have the final say. So please, I can't say I beg of you, but we really have to look at this. It's all for Canadian. It's a Canadian agreement, and we just have to understand it.
Fred.
Thank you, Chairman. Fred Sertrack, Northeast Fisheries Science Center. I'm up here just as a point of clarification. I have been involved with the TMGC for a number of years, and it strikes to a point that Dave just mentioned about what would happen if overages occurred. I don't have any text in front of me. Dave didn't have any text in front of me, but I have a different understanding, and I feel it's important to raise that now in terms of your discussions. Dave is right. Penalties were discussed, but there was no penalty schedule that was ever developed. And the issue of overages hasn't occurred until apparently this year. But what I do recall is that the overages were going to be taken one for one. That is, if a country had 200 tons overage in 1 year, then they would get 200 tons deducted from their quota the following year. It wasn't supposed to be given to anyone else, the other party. It was supposed to come off of that country's allocation the subsequent year. If that is the case, and again, that's just my understanding, there may be others that could look at it, and if one were to redress the situation, then it seems to me that what would happen under that scenario is the Canadian share of 1,406 metric tons would be reduced by 200 tons. We would not gain any more tonnage in the U.S., but the penalty would accrue to the country that overran in the prior year. Thank you, Chairman.
Trevor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Trevor Kensington, Fisheries Survival Fund. I'm not going to make any attempt to defend my countrymen's inability to live up to their agreements, and I will happily endorse whatever viewpoints the Council wishes to take. I did want to inform everybody, since there's been a lot of discussion about scallopers and bycatch, the industries on the two sides of the border are initiating dialogue. We don't know how far it'll go. Unfortunately, David Frueler has been delayed by illness in his family. So I've sort of been the inadvertent liaison person. We are beginning to talk, and what we are going to be talking about is how to reduce bycatch. The Canadian scallopers, if they have not been limited by bycatch in the past, they are deathly afraid that as these numbers go through their system, they will be limited. And I think that's a very realistic perspective. So that's coming. There's been all sorts of things said about the size of their twine top mesh. I analyzed the data on their experiments, and I don't remember the end result. I really don't think it's 4-inch. I think they're in something like 6 or 8. The reason they didn't go to 10 is they found as you moved up to 10, your bycatch ratio actually increased. You let out more scallops than fish. And it was that concern, not that they were losing scallops, but that it was actually a negative effect on bycatch, and they were losing scallops on top of it. And that information was given to the PDT down here back when we moved to 10-inch. But the PDT here decided that the Canadian experiments weren't relevant here. So, well, we have a dialogue to go. It is starting, and what we can do from this side of the border to help them reduce their bycatch is going to please them, and I imagine please everybody here too. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay, back to the council. Dave Pierce and then Tom.
I think it's clear that there's a dissatisfaction with the way in which events have transpired, this 200 metric ton overage. And someone made a suggestion, I think David Borden made a suggestion, that indeed this probably should be remanded back to the TMGC for further work. And I believe that is appropriate. So I would make a motion to substitute. That motion being, I've moved to remand the proposed 2007 Eastern Georges Bank Cod U.S. / Canadian TACs back to the TMGC to address the Canadian 200 metric ton, 205 TAC, well, 2000. The 2005 TAC overage.
Seconded by Tom Hill. Does anyone disagree with this? Not going to take any more comment on it then. All right. On the motion to amend, all those in favor, raise your hand. Substitute. Opposed. Abstentions. 2 abstentions. Motion to substitute passes, becomes the main motion, doesn't it?
Yes.
So we have to vote again. All those in favor, raise your hand. 13. Opposed? Abstention. Motion passes. Okay, George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that was a good discussion. Yellowtail flounder, which is on page 5 of document 7. We had a combined U.S.-Canada catch in 2005 of 4,150 metric tons with a TAC of 6,000 metric tons. And as has been described by the center staff, we've got trouble with yellowtail flounder with declining recruitment, a truncated age structure, and reduced spatial distribution. F has remained high in the fishery, well above the FRF of 0.26. The F in 2005 was 1.37. An important note, and it's been discussed a little bit, is that in the past, two models were presented, the base case model and the major change model, and this year only the major change model was used. And importantly, and Chris mentioned this, it wasn't used this year because it was rejected by the track as being unreliable for all the reasons that have been mentioned previously. Assuming a 2006 catch equal to the 3,000 metric ton quota, a combined U.S.-Canada catch, if the 2006 catch is equal to 3,000 metric tons, a combined U.S.-Canada catch, the track recommended of about 1,250 tons, which would represent a neutral risk of that F would exceed the FREF. The TMGC recommendation was for a tax slightly higher, 1,500 metric tons, a bit above the 1,250 metric ton number presented by the track. The proposed track TAC, would result in a fishing mortality rate of 0.31, a bit above the FREF of 0.26. The 1,500 metric ton TAC would also allow the age 4 plus biomass to increase by some 43%, I think the number was given. Reasons for recommending the 1,500 ton metric ton TAC as opposed to the 1,250 ton metric ton TAC by the TMGC was that we had undercatching. If the TAC is undercaught, it would result in an F being closer to the FREF. This has been the pattern in the past with the Canadians under-harvesting their quota. It will be closer this year, but there was still some discussion about their TAC, their proportion of the TAC, or their catch would be less than their proportion of the TAC. A TAC of 1,500 metric tons would allow a significant biomass increase in the age 4-plus fish, as I said. And there were, if you look at the patterns of decline in F, 2004, the F was 1.92, 2005 was 1.37, 2006 was 0.83, and 2007 is projected, if we use this 1,500 metric ton TAC, to be 0.31. We also have to look at what has happened to the TAC, and as David Borden reminded me at noon, it never went down under his watch and has under mine. In 2004, we had a 7,900 metric ton TAC. 2005 was 6,000 metric tons. 2006 was 3,000. And 2007 is recommended at 1,500 metric tons. This is 19% of the 04 level. So we have had drastic reductions in the TAC, and it's shown, the results of that have shown, I think, in the declines in F and the increases in the biomass. so we did take into account what some of the impacts on the fishery, and we are also these numbers also assume that the TAC would be fully taken, which hasn't been a case in the past. A 1,500 metric ton TAC would be divided 28% to Canada and 72% to the U.S. for a U.S. TAC of 1,040 metric tons and a Canadian TAC of 460 metric tons. And before we get into my motion, my final note is that given the trends that we've seen in this fishery and the assessment, if the current trends continue to next year, the 2008 TAC will be very likely be far lower than 1,500 metric tons, which would result in crippling conditions in the U.S. and the Canadian groundfish and scallop fisheries. We would be, Mike O'Connor wrote this down, we would be pooched. 1,500 tons is, again, 19% of where we were 4 years ago. If we go much lower, we're going to have incredibly significant impacts in all our fisheries. That's just a note I wanted to make sure we made before we get into the discussion. And I have a committee motion, and that's that the 2007 Georges Bank yellowtail flounder total allowable catch be set at 1,500 metric tons with a U.S. share of 1,080 metric tons, which is 72%, and a Canada share of 420 metric tons, which is 28%.
Committee motion doesn't need a second. Discussion? George?
It probably will come as no surprise that we can't support this motion for many of the reasons I went into earlier. I think the scientific advice from the track is very clear. It may not be without any uncertainty, but scientific advice seldom is. They clearly rejected the use of the base case model and endorsed the major change model. There were several indicators of very disturbing trends in the fishery. As George pointed out, I think we're in a point where we're at very low attack levels, and that may continue if we continue to overfish the stock, as we've been apparently doing for many years. It's going to continue to go lower, and we're going to have to pay the piper at some point. And when we do, it's going to be even more difficult for both the scallop fishery and the groundfish fishery. So I think we need to be at least risk neutral and heed the scientific advice. I'd recommend that rather than going forward with this measure, this also be remanded to the TMGC for further consideration, given the science, given the requirements and the objectives of the FMP and Framework 42.
John.
George.
Just a couple things in response. We understood that the base case model was rejected, and we didn't use it either. I think that's important for people to realize. What we did was make a slightly higher recommendation than the risk-neutral TAC recommendation for the reasons I stated. And yes, we have been overfishing this stock in the past, but it's important, I think, I'm stating this correctly. We didn't think we were overfishing until we changed the model. We thought we were right in the money, and so I think using the new model with the F of 0.31, which is only with the FREF is 0.25, so we're quite close. And so the overfishing in the past was not done. You know, there's been some criticism saying that we didn't do our job in setting the quotas. We did based on the model we had, and we're now adjusting to this model, and this is trying to, you know, to ameliorate some of the very significant impacts, because we've gone down in quota 50%. This would be the third year running, which is huge.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that we mismanaged, because we were reacting to the best information we had at the time. But knowing what we know now, it appears that we were overfishing for that period of time, and we have to deal with that now.
Okay, we can take some more comments from the council, but before we do, when you provide your comments, I think I can read the tea leaves. We're going to send this one back to try to provide some guidance or a goal that you want the TMGC to achieve when we do go back. Tom Hill, then Rodney.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would send this one back. I, quite frankly, think the change would be to move to amend to approve a 1,250 metric ton quota with the corresponding 72%, 28% allocation. And I don't see why, not sure we can, from a legal standpoint, we can unilaterally change the technical advice without a sound rationale, and uncertainty has never been that rationale. And it would seem to me that sending it back to the committee, that unless we're going to give them guidance to do this, why, it seems to me that's just sort of a circular process. And unless I'm hearing something different from a technical standpoint, it would seem to me we ought to recommend, I'd rather take, again, and I hear George, and I'd much rather take a reduction again that's enough than have to do it again next year and be risked slightly more conservative this year than have to take an even bigger bite next year because we, again, overestimated where we were at with the stock. I just, having been down that road with a number of other stocks, it never works out. Never works out, and I think that it's harder. The smaller the number it gets, the harder it is to make the cut. And I would just encourage us to, I mean, it seems to me that if we have technical advice that's, let's see, it's about 10% less than what we're proposing. The difference between, is it 10? I'm sorry. Yeah, no, 15, is it roughly, what, 15%? Seems to me that it's easier to make, no, it is 10%. Sorry. Having a brain cramp. No, 250. No, it's about 15%. Seems to me it's easier to do that now than it is to do it next year. Thank you.
We have a motion on the table. Do we have a second? Seconded by John Nelson. My understanding is if the council wants to adopt a different number, whether it's higher or lower, we still need to go back to Canada and talk to the Canadians. George?
We could certainly take unilateral action, and it would shrink our proportion of the quota, but unless it's remanded to the TMGC, they'd be under no obligation to make an adjustment to their side. So if you want it done bilaterally, the correct action, I think, would be to remand it to the TMGC.
Right. And if we're going to go down that road, we need to have a mission or a purpose. What's the goal of the TMGC when it goes back into the negotiations? And as a point of background, one of the things we did get out of the TMGC meeting was that they believe that their bycatch this year in the scallop fisheries has a good chance of eating up all of that number that's on the board right now, their share of the quota. So, George.
If I can comment on the motion, and I certainly understand where Tom's going with this, and again, I was the motion or the idea for 1,500 metric tons was mine, but agreed to by the TMGC. It's important for people to recognize, unless the trend continue. I mean, unless there's some that the trend doesn't continue, regardless of whether we're at 1,250 metric tons or 1,500, next year will be significantly reduced, and it will make the issues of bycatch. It might make the issue of a directed fishery moot, and it will make the issues of the bycatch in the scallop fishery and in other groundfish fisheries. Hugely larger. And so I understand that the motion, but we may be in that situation regardless, and so people should understand that.
I had Rodney next. I'm sorry.
I was going to change the motion.
You're going to change the motion?
Yeah, okay. I was just going to suggest that the motion be amended to remand the issue to the TMGC with the advice that they renegotiate the quota to be consistent with the technical recommendations of 1,250 metric tons, et cetera, et cetera.
Is that okay with the seconder?
Yeah.
Okay. Rodney?
Yeah. My point is to the motion above this one. I've got a point on that. I don't mind sharing as long as we both parties share and get the same bite at the apple. And from what I see there, unless the Canadians change their scallop gear, they're going to eat up all of that quota just on bycatch with their scallop gear. That's what I see there. Unless they do something to address their bycatch in the scallop fishery, the whole quota, the entire quota, our quota and their quota, they're going to eat up as a bycatch.
Just in response to that, Rodney, they know that. They know that last year, I don't remember the exact numbers, they had a directed fishery of some, I'm going to say 40 metric tons. It was a very low number, and their bycatch was near 250 or something like that. And so that they know that, in fact, the 494 or the 420 there will be almost entirely bycatch in the scallop fishery. We actually asked because of in years past, they had a small catch, and they didn't use all their catch in their tack in the bycatch fishery. We asked them to loan us a couple hundred metric tons, and they didn't feel like they had any to loan or to give because of bycatch in the scallop fishery. So they're, I think, pretty aware of that issue.
Just respond to that.
Okay, yeah. Rodney.
I think we're going to go on this for a while. We're not going to end by 4:20.
Dang.
So we're going to sit here and sacrifice our scallop fishery for their scallop fishery. I don't think that's the way to operate, because that's what we're going to do. We're going to sacrifice our scallop fishery down there and give it to the Canadians until they address their bycatch problem.
It's my understanding of this agreement that what it does is it allows, based on biological targets, for a percentage to be allocated to either country, and thereafter the country has the discretion to allocate it how they will. And we allocate it one way and they allocate it another, but the important part is to make sure that it stays within biological limits.
Dr. Pierce.
Yes, the second motion, the one made by Tom, it's not clear what the intent is. The motion that George made was to go with 1,500 metric tons, and now the motion that Tom made is to renegotiate but go to 1,250. Tom is saying 1,250. I mean, why renegotiate when the recommendation coming out of the group was 1,250? Maybe I'm losing track as to what the position was before the TMGC addressed it. Could Georgia answer that question for me? I know it's a 50% risk neutral, 1,250 metric tons. Was that the position you had to wrestle with, and then you decided as a TMGC, the U.S. side, to go with a different number, the 1,500?
We are given the same recommendation that Chris gave, and that was for 1,250 metric tons, which is the 50% risk neutral. The number that's 50%, or Jesus Christ, it's getting late, that is risk neutral in terms of exceeding the FRF. And as I said, it would allow an increase in biomass. The 1,500 metric tons isn't risk neutral. It's a little more risk prone. And so what I think Tom is saying is go back and put 1,250 metric tons on the table because it is, in fact, risk neutral.
Okay, but the Canadian side, your Canadian counterparts on the TMGC, they're supporting the 1,250?
My Canadian counterparts, the TMGC operates by a party will come up with a proposed number. The other group will come back and caucus if they need to. So this was agreed to by both all these numbers were agreed to by both the Canadian and the U.S. sides.
Okay, so then it seems strange to say to the TMGC to go back to the drawing board and pick the 1,250. This motion doesn't make any sense to me. I'm sorry.
If I could weigh in here, I think that what the amended motion is saying is that this body recommends 1,250. 1,500 is too high. Go back to Canada and renegotiate until you get to 1,250.
But
that's the intent of the motion. And we would need to renegotiate because, as you pointed out, Canada and the United States side agreed to 1,500. So it would require a renegotiation. George.
Right. If I may, Mr. Chairman, to the motion, to amend, and actually my comments also pertinent to the original motion. Whether it's 1,250, whether it's 1,500, I'm still uncomfortable with this strategy since none of us have any understanding, I don't think, as to the consequences to all of our U.S. Georges Bank fisheries by dropping the yellowtail flounder quota down to that number, which is about it's slashing it by half. I can't recall now. It's a tremendous cut. Now, maybe it's justified, biologically speaking. Maybe the assessment advice is right on target. Okay, fine. But before I make a decision to go in that direction, I still would like to make that decision with some knowledge beforehand, that being, what does this mean for us, for our scallop fishery, for example, next year and the year after that? I would like that kind of an evaluation first before I make any final determination as to what number I will pick. And if I'm eventually convinced to go with, for example, a 1,250, then I will do so with knowledge as to the impact of that 1,250 on the Georges Bank fisheries. Also, those who are dependent upon the Georges Bank fisheries, scallop and otherwise, would also know. We wouldn't just do this and say, we'll see how the chips fall. I would rather act with some knowledge beforehand, which is why, at this particular moment, I'm not inclined to support any of these options.
Paul.
Another thing I think we can't forget is that George has reiterated Pat's position that he said at U.S. steering. 1,500 is inconsistent with the Magnuson-Stevens Act, so it can't be approved because it's above the FMSY or whatever our F rate is in Amendment 13. This would result in a higher F.
But again, I'm not convinced because of the nature of the assessment and all the uncertainty within that assessment and the fact that we're using the major change model. I'm still mulling this over. I don't know what to think about the Georges Bank yellowtail flounder assessment except to say it's a mess. And I believe that word was used by somebody well, maybe I shouldn't say that, but it's a mess. That's my own personal perspective and the perspective of others with whom I've dealt at previous meetings to go over this assessment to try to understand it. As a consequence, I understand where Pat's coming from because she's, I guess, obliged to use certain information that's provided, but I'm not at this point in time, and I will not be satisfied until I have some accounting of, as best we can judge it, the consequences to this council and to the fishing industry that the fish is on George's Bank for scallops and other things. This has huge ramifications that relate to George's Bank fishing and shifts to effort to other areas outside of George's Bank as fishermen strive to compensate for their loss of George's Bank.
I must, though I agree with David, I would like to know what the impacts in other fisheries might be. Why, I'm not sure that's the criteria under which we manage a single stock. I wish it was, but our obligation, as I understood it under the agreement and under the national standards, is to manage this stock, be sure that we're not exceeding our RF rate. If it needs to be rebuilt, to rebuild, and if it doesn't need to be rebuilt, to fish consistently with the requirements of the Act. And I guess maybe I missed the boat because I thought that the, and I'm not being flip either, I'm not clear. If 1,500 metric tons is approvable, which I'm hearing that it is not, why, great. And if there's a very low risk that we're going to have to go to 900 metric tons next year or something equally draconian in order to try to catch up with the curve, which we always chase. See, I remember it wasn't too many years ago that we were rapidly increasing the TAC. And there was very few voices that said, you know, that might not be a good idea. We ought to be a little more conservative than that. Everybody was really excited about the idea that we had a growing fishery, and let's have at it. And it seems to be, and I don't say that in criticism to anybody, I mean that sincerely. It just seems to be that when we're on the up curve, why everybody's let's have at it and let's make a lot of money or provide opportunity. Here's a success story that we can talk about. And now we've got a uh-oh, and it's much harder, it seems, to respond to the technical advice that's saying, look, there's some real risk here. And if there's a debate about which model to use, that seems to have been going on between the technical folks. And I, quite frankly, I'm not qualified to evaluate that. Maybe Dr. Pierce is, but I'm not. I'm not sure many people at this table are, quite honestly. I have to go with... If you have a body of scientists from both countries saying, yep, this model tends to reflect what we're seeing in reality. It's matching the survey information. I have some slight queasiness about the idea that maybe it isn't some of its unreported landings. I got a sneaking suspicion that might be an issue. The fish aren't there. They've already gone to market. Or they got dead somehow because they're not showing up in the surveys. And so it doesn't matter whether, from my standpoint, the yield next year is based on what it is that is available, seems to me. Not whether we have the exact model, but I suspect the model that they're talking about, if it's accurately reflecting the survey indices that they're experiencing, that they probably are right. I'm going to take that risk, but... The council can do whatever it wants. It just seems to me that we need to be fairly deliberate. If we send it back to committee, we need to tell them to do something. And that doesn't mean, to me, to argue about the way that we measure the stock size, since none of the people on the TMGC have those kind of qualifications. And so, I don't know. It's just a suggestion. If it's not any good, the council can vote it down. But it seems to me we ought to do something with it.
George, did you want to respond to that?
Not to that specifically, but I had a conversation with Tom Neese at lunch, which I'd like to bring him up and put him on the spot for. The discussion about the – first of all, I was remiss in not saying that from Tom Neese and Tom Warren, we got great support for the TMG, TMGC deliberations, and we got help from on the U.S. side from Fred and Ralph and Chris and Stratus Gavaris on the Canadian side, and they have been incredibly open and honest about what they know and they don't know. And so, you know, I've got to give them credit where credit is due. But in terms of the recommendation that we make, Tom relayed that because of one of the Amendment 13 court cases, this should be an issue. This may be an issue more of what right to do biologically than the, I'm going to call it a threat, the concern that the RA may overturn our recommendation. So if with that, if you could clarify, Tom, that would be great.
Well, I'm going to look for some help from the regional office and perhaps from Gene as well. The process that's set up under the TMGC right now is that the TMGC makes a recommendation on tags, which they've done. And those recommendations go back to the council on the U.S. side, and technically they go back to the Department of Fish and Oceans on the Canadian side. If either of those management bodies have a problem with the TMGC's recommendations, then the process has a loop where the body can send their negotiators back to renegotiate the TAC, which was what was, I think, recommended on the cod TAC anyway earlier. What I'm not terribly clear on is what happens should the same recommendation come back from the TMGC. In the Amendment 13 final rule, the proposal was put in the final rule that if the council doesn't forward the TMGC's recommendations, that the service could impose a TAC, or the service could adopt the TMGC recommendation anyway. The assumption being, I guess, that the council would recommend a higher TAC than the TMGC. That was challenged by an industry group, and I believe that provision was overturned. What I'm unclear about is what happens if the TMGC continues to recommend a TAC that the service either does not want to accept or does not send forward.
I'll answer part of that, and then I'll ask Gene to fill in the rest to the extent he's able to. I think your recollection is correct. Our problem would be if the council recommended to us a TAC that would be inconsistent with national standards, either not using best available science or allowing overfishing, and or inconsistent with the FMP objectives, we would have a dilemma. Then as to how we would deal with that, I think I'll let Gene respond to the rest of that.
Well, the question, to be quite frank, is whether we could unilaterally pick a TAC that would be different than the council in the same process system that's outlined in the regulations, in the Amendment 13 regulations. And given that the court negated some of our original language in that respect, our authority to do that is somewhat fuzzy, to put it in technical legal terms. With annual specifications in many of our fisheries, the councils, both Mid-Atlantic and New England, recommend annual specifications, and there's clear language that contemplates that the service can specify specifications that are different than those recommended by the council. And we put that out for proposed rulemaking, and we explain the reasons why, and this is usually stated directly in the regulatory language, we state the reasons why our specifications differ from the council's. That language is not as clearly specified now, based on what the court did in the lawsuit challenging Amendment 13. And so we're still looking into that legal authority. We may not have that legal authority just to unilaterally change it in the context of proposing TACs. Now, we always would have the authority to do it as emergency or interim rule to the extent that we can find justification under that provision, which is an independent way of unilaterally implementing regulations that we think are necessary under under law. So that's the dilemma that we find ourselves in, is if the council gives us a TAC based on the TMGC process that does not meet, in our opinion, biological objectives, then we would have to either there's no TAC, which would obviously present a problem, or the agency would have to find a way to implement that unilaterally so that we have some TAC in existence. And I can't give you a totally definitive answer because we're still exploring our options in the context that I just explained.
Phil Rule, you are next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I, judging from the conversation that we just went on, I'm a little confused. Because if I understand it right, the rebuilding schedule for George's Bank Yellowtail is framework 42, which don't exist yet.
No. Yes, you're right.
So, I mean, how are we bound to 42 when it's not 40? That's not regulation yet. Right now it's hypothetical. It hasn't become anything. It's not anything.
It is over. Overfishing is occurring. You know that. And there's a requirement to address that. That exists now.
I mean, in 42, we're specify the FRF of 2.5, I think it is, right? So my confusion is if that little bit of difference between the 1250 and 15, I put you at 0.3, I think it was, or something like that. I forget what the number was. That puts you into the overfishing, that little bit of difference. That's the requirement for it. That's where I'm lost in this.
Yes.
Because really, to me, what spells out how we got to do it isn't a requirement yet. It could be next week, but as of today, it ain't.
You're technically correct, but we have notified you that the stock is overfished. You've already made a recommendation on how you're going to fix it. You don't have any other recommendation on a rebuilding plan that would substitute for it. The only thing that's out there, and it's just a matter of time before final action is taken on that, probably not very much time. You're certainly going to know well before the beginning of the next fishing year what your rebuilding plan is going to be and what your F target is.
I have John Nelson next.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I was hoping Gene was going to clarify it for me. And I'm sure he did, somewhere. It just didn't sink in quite right, and I apologize to Gene for not absorbing it. My concern was that if we do not go back and renegotiate, I understand what Dr. Pierce is concerned about with the models, and we went through that discussion with the models, and I don't think that's going to be solved here, and you're not going to get that information until, as I understand it, around the time of the GARM. So, therefore, that's not going to get solved right now. So you're just stuck with what you've got. So if we don't go back and negotiate, it seems to me that then we pass this recommendation on to the service. The Canadians go forward with their share. They accept their share, which I'm sure they will, and then the feds say, geez, that's not right. Well, based on our legal limitations, well, we're reducing ours. And guess who comes up with the short end of the stick? Because we get reduced, the Canadians keep their higher portion, because if they went to 12, if we went to 1250, they'd get less than the 420, maybe around 60 metric tons or so less. But that they're not going to get that. They're going to keep that 60 or so. We're the ones that are going to get reduced, And I don't think that's the good deal. So that's why let's just vote on this, send it back to the committee, see what comes out of it. We know the limitations that are the other fears and limitations that are out there.
Dr. Pierce.
Right, we've had some lengthy discussion about what can be done, what should be done, and George Darcy has expressed his view in strong terms. I would suggest that we turn to page 7 of the guidance document. And this is the TMGC guidance document. And read the justification, the rationale for selecting 1,500 metric tons. To me, that's very compelling rationale that the National Marine Fisheries Service should embrace, especially with regard to the socioeconomic impacts, which I still insist cannot be ignored by the service in light of the severity of the cut. Specifically, it says right here, although the recommended TAC is associated with the fishing mortality rate slightly above the reference level of 0.25, the fishing mortality would be reduced to 0.31 from 1.37 in 2005 and 0.83 in 2006. Very significant. And here's the most important statement. The recommended TAC would not undermine stock rebuilding. With a catch of 1,500 metric tons in 2007, the Aegis 4-plus biomass is expected to increase by 43%. And then there's other text there and some special considerations. Frankly, I think that's excellent logic and support of George and the rest of the TMGC's position relative to the 1,500. Again, I'm uncomfortable with 1,500 and 1,250, but if I had to select something, I'd say 1,500, bring it back to the TMGC for further discussion with an understanding that the 1,250 really need not be adopted, and especially because of that specific rationale. Plenty of rationale for going with 1,500 in terms of dealing with the biology of the beast.
Rip, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that we are beginning to go in circles on this issue, and I would like to move the question.
Okay. This is a motion to amend. If this goes forward, I'll definitely hit up the audience for comment. Okay. It's going to be a roll call vote.
Please read the motion and answer yes, no, or abstain. Rodney?
No.
Rip Cunningham?
Yes.
David Pierce?
No.
David Gaethel? Tom Hill?
Yes.
Mike Leary?
Yes.
George Darcy?
Yes.
Terry, George LaPointe?
No.
John Nelson?
Yes.
John, Dave Preple?
Yes.
Dana Rice? No. Phil Rule? David Simpson?
Yes.
And Mark Gibson?
No.
Motion carries.
Motion carries, 8-5-1. Now the main motion. We go to the audience because we've had plenty of discussion at the table. Vito.
I think it was touched on a little bit about the Canadian scallop bycatch and that the method that they use is something that they look at the end of the year. They fish on a calendar year, so by the time the numbers are available, TMGC implements on a fishing year, so it takes 2 years to pay back the overage. I was also in attendance in the audience of the TMGC meeting, and this current year, which is almost 6 months old, is 900 metric ton Canadian quota for George's Bank Yellowtail. And there was a discussion about the Canadians have been catching somewhere around 400 or 500 metric ton total. And could any of that underage this current year be used towards doing a calculation? So the calculation that that's saying that at a neutral risk the F is 0.31 was done considering that the Canadians would catch the full 900 metric tons. And the Canadians were concerned that their scallop fishery, because they don't look at it until it's too late,
could theoretically could catch the 900 metric ton. So I just think that, you know, the U.S. here, Tom especially, I'd like you to consider this. No matter how low you make this TAC, the Canadians have no method of controlling the scallop catch. And right now it looks like at on the low side it would be 500 metric tons, and on the high side, by their own testimony at the TMGC, it could be the whole 900 this year. So if even 200 metric ton were done through the calculation that Ralph had done, as an underage of this current fishing year, I'd be surprised if neutral risk, I don't know, what would neutral risk, maybe it would show F reference. I mean, I don't think we have to look too far to get the 0.31 to 0.25. And it is neutral risk that the stock's going to increase, as David said, 44%. That's neutral risk. And we're not currently in a formal rebuilding program. So if we cut this down to 1250, there will be no practical reduction in the Canadian catch as a result of that, because they do not have a management system on that side of the border to start controlling the catch of yellowtail to these low numbers. It's the scallop fishery that's going to take their TAC. And it'll be the United States rebuilding program implemented in Framework 42 that makes up for all of that overage, because we're going to have to fish at F rebuild after 2009. And it remains to be seen what the Canadians will do about fishing below F reference. I tend to doubt that they're going to be too amenable to fishing below F reference. So but we'll be rebuilding continuously. I'm not saying, I don't think you have to choose to overfish here. I think you need to look at, in practice, we've got a transboundary stock here that's going to be fished at a much higher level than whatever you allocate to the Canadians if we go with this extremely low, hammered down version of the model. You know, is it possible the terminal year of the assessment that the track did not contemplate what the current year's catch was? I don't believe. That's something that's done, through the TMGC process. Is it possible to look again, if something goes back to the TMGC at that 900 metric ton where we're at now, or where the United States catch may be, to get a neutral risk of F reference and have the 1,500 metric ton there? I mean, the U.S. share of this quota is going to be, when you deduct scallop catch, is going to be smaller than the Cape Cod Yellowtail TAC in 2006, just to give you some perspective. Be less quota on the entire Georges Bank fishery if, you know, with this quota. So it's a pretty serious, I don't think we need to do a lot of economic impacts to figure out what the consequences are. So I'm a little bit disappointed that we took the three stocks independently, because I think before we go back to the TMGC, we ought to think about the whole negotiation. You know, the cod discussion I didn't comment on because I agree, you know, we got the crap into the stick on that one. But, you know, if we bring the cod to the table, when we have this one that the council could adopt at 1,500 ton, and George could get his scientific best available done by asking what Ralph can do another Gazinta to figure out what it would take for less catch 2006 to get F reference to match up. That might be another way to go. We don't have to go take the send the TMGC back for negotiation until it's time to go to F rebuild.
Thanks, Vito. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's clear that there's no benefit to the U.S. scallop fleet or the U.S. groundfish fleet to agree to 1,250 metric tons. But more importantly, there's no benefit to the resource, because the Canadians will probably agree to 1,250, but they're going to go ahead and take whatever they take, period. If they're telling us that they think they're going to take 900 metric tons as bycatch in the scallop fishery in 2006, and they have no mechanism for overages, they have no plans to change gear, obviously they're going to go over in 2007. And so there will be no benefit to the resource from that until we get that figured out. It doesn't help. It doesn't help the fishery. It puts our fishery at great risk, and it doesn't do anything biologically. Thank you.
John Williamson, then Rich.
Excuse me, John Williamson for the Ocean Conservancy. This is not about quid pro quo. As I understand it, from talking to some of the scientists, the retrospective pattern that's driving this problem is an unfortunate happenstance, something that's happened. They've given the managers recommendations for how to deal with that, and the management community is attempting to deal with that. At this point, this body of managers is blameless for this situation. At this point, this body, the management system last year, from what I understand, responded to concerns about the retrospective analysis and set appropriate tack for the advice last year. Advice in previous years was based on a faulty model, and now you're attempting to deal with the repercussions of that. If you take this action, as is up on the screen, you are blameless again. You are attempting to do the right thing with the situation that you've got. If you do not take this action, if you go with a higher tack, and it results in serious problems, especially if the Canadians don't respond as well, and we have a dramatically bad situation occur around Georges Bank Yellowtail, which was a bright spot that we were all crowing about just a few years ago when we, to the American public. If this turns into a tragedy in the next year or two, and the American public is suddenly focusing on some sort of train wreck going on, okay, it will be this, if this body has acted responsibly up to that point, that will be the story that will be told. And it'll be the Canadians' fault if it's not addressed on the Canadian side of the line. So I would urge you to take this action at a minimum.
Richie. Then Trevor.
Thanks, John. Again, I don't understand. It's just ironic that 3 years ago we opened up that SAP and there was a ton of yellowtail coming in and they got 20 cents for their yellowtail and everything was beautiful, that the stock was recovered. But if we did an assessment of how much that stock was worth out there, I think we'd be surprised at how cheap it was. But anyway, we started off at a 7,900 metric ton to be split. And then it was 6,000, then 3,000. And then 4 years later, we're down to 1,250 metric ton. Doesn't it tell you something that maybe the science is wrong? When we had a stock assessment of unheard of yellowtails out there, every year seems to be going in half. It tends to tell me that there's something wrong with the science. It could be the trawl. It could be a mechanism at that trawl end. But even the scientists don't understand where it is other than let's get a model that fits our mess up over here. The economic impact is going to be substantial at 1250 or 1500. And again, if we go back and try to renegotiate it and we get 1500, National Marine Fisheries Service is going to say 1250. So again, are we wasting our time? This agreement has to be rewritten or redone over with, because when there's no penalties for the Canadians and there's penalties for us and we're fishing as far as a rebuilding plan in the Canada isn't on F rate, mesh sizes, everything's different. Again, it's apples and bananas and there's no penalty on their end. We have to renegotiate it. If it makes sense to any of you people, I would just say go with the 1250, but it just doesn't make sense to me. Not whatsoever. Especially when we had a stock that was so abundant. So what you're telling me is your science was so screwed up that it was 3-4 times what it is now. What says that the science is better today other than we came up with a model to fit what we think the science is? Thanks.
Trevor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Mr. Canastra is right on the point. the stock assessment is just unreliable. The stock assessment scientists themselves have told you this is less reliable than a normal stock assessment. Don't often hear them say that. And as we all know, stock assessment is a very, very imprecise science, and this one's worse. Chris Legault is probably regretting his words of a big hammer, but they were his words. There were a number of big hammers they could have used. Some of them I can dream up immediately. I'm sure everybody else could come up with other ones. There were a number of big hammers. There were a number of places that you could have hit that assessment with each of those hammers. And for every hammer you chose and different place you chose to hit it, you got a different number at the other end. Somebody said, oh, well, at least we know the yellowtail aren't there because the survey's not taking them. Wrong. The survey is taking them. The model is then dividing the survey catch by its estimate of how much the catchability has changed. I believe the average is 3 times. From what Chris said a little bit earlier, for certain size classes of yellowtail, it's 5 times. The survey is taking them. The model is then dividing by a number of something like 3 before deciding how many yellowtail are out there. We don't have any sort of independent confirmation of this stock assessment result. It may be right. It may be completely wrong. We just don't know. So think for a moment, what would you would have done if the track had done what no stock assessment people ever do, but all of us should, and come back to you and said, I'm sorry, we've tried everything. We've tried every model. We've tried every permutation. We just can't tell you what the TAC should be. What would this council do then? I would suggest to you that you would make a balanced choice between two things. One of them would be cut this fishery down far enough now that if it is dropping, we can get underneath the problem, start it back up again, take a cut now rather than taking a bigger one later. That's one thing you would aim for. The other one would be don't gut existing fisheries and then find out 2 or 3 years down the road there was no need to do so and you ruined your industry to no reason. You would draw some balance between those two. I think this 1,500-ton limit, which sounds to me to be too low, I don't think it's where I would have drawn the balance, but I think it was an attempt to draw that balance. Recognizing that 1,250 number had very little basis in science, it was the best that could be done, but it's still very, very uncertain. So what do you do? How far do you cut? TMGC said 1,500 tons. I don't know. Not my problem. I think I would have put the number higher, but obviously I work for one specialized interest and it affects my thinking. All of you have to think, was 1,500 tons a reasonable balance? Was it too high, too low? We've been told, well, anything more than 1,250 wouldn't be legally allowed. I don't think that's right. If the service's report to Congress says there is overfishing occurring, then you have your 1 year or whatever to respond. You are not required to get under the fishing mortality threshold in the first year. The guidelines we've all worked under since 1998 say if you discover that overfishing is occurring, you have a reasonable period of time to correct that problem. Again, you're not gutting a fishery instantaneously and then discovering it wasn't necessary. You have a period of time either to allow things to adjust, because all of us, given a problem, if we have time, we can hope to cope with it. Or maybe it's time to find it wasn't a problem at all. And as has been said before, you don't yet have a 10-year rebuilding plan in place. Therefore, nothing can be disallowed on the basis that the biomass increase wouldn't achieve a target. The biomass increase is predicted to be 43% anyway, so I suspect that would meet your 10-year target, but the analysis would have to be done. I urge you all to think carefully whether the TMGC drew a reasonable balance at 1,500. If so, go with it. If you really think that wasn't a reasonable balance, go for 1,250, but not because an extremely unreliable stock assessment happened to come up with 1,250, not 1,300 or 1,450 or some other number. Thank you.
Thank you, Trevor. We're going to come back to the council. Go ahead, Paul.
Another idea we could do, instead of saying, consistent with 1,250, you say consistent with FREF. So in other words, we have an FREF that seems to be the the guideline in our Sustainable Fisheries Act. And there may be, if Fred and Ralph and the TMGC folks could take a look at the more up-to-date data and look at the fact that they're on a calendar year, we're on a May 1 year, that the Canadians didn't catch all the attack in 2005, I don't think. There may be enough variables that you can tweak out 250 pounds. So tons, excuse me. But it seems like there may be enough things that we can get down to 0.25 or whatever the FREF is and still keep 1,500. The bottom line is we need a scientific document if you really want it to go through.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, I have no problem with that friendly amendment if the seconder does not object.
Motion's been perfected, and question's been called. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I only object because it's not clear to me what this means. From my reading of the documents before me, the FREF at the 50% risk-neutral figure is 1,250 metric tons. So it doesn't really get us away from the 1,250. It still delivers us there. And I don't know what magic can be done by scientists who would then move forward to in some way react to this particular motion. It still translates to me as 1,250, and that's where it will lie. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems that way to me.
Okay, I'm going to call a question. Roll call vote. To remand the previous motion to the TMGC with the advice that the committee renegotiate the quota to be consistent with F reference.
Did someone make that motion? I accepted it as a friendly perfection to the motion.
Okay. Please answer yes, no, or abstain. I'll start at the bottom this time, Ron. Mark Gibson.
No.
David Simpson.
Yes.
Phil Rule.
No.
Dana Rice.
No.
Dave Preble.
Yes.
Okay. John Nelson.
Yes.
George LaPointe.
No.
George Darcy.
Yes.
Mike Leary.
Yes.
Tom Hill.
Yes.
David Gaethel.
Yes.
David Pierce.
No.
Rip Cunningham.
Yes.
Rodney Avila.
No. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Motion passes 8-6.
Motion passes
8-6. David.
I think based on the previous 2 hours discussion and based on the discussion we had the last time we went through this same situation, it's become painfully apparent to me anyway that this, I forget what the formal term is, it's not at a level of agreement. Understanding does not work. It needs to rise to a higher level. And therefore, I would make a motion to request that the Secretary of Commerce request the State Department to negotiate a formal agreement to manage transboundary stocks.
We need to put that on the agenda. That's a full agenda item.
Yeah. I'm going to roll the question out of order.
Should be on the agenda.
But if you want to make the motion so that we put it on the agenda in November, that's fine.
All right, I'll make the motion to put it on the agenda.
Seconded by Rodney. Discussion. George.
I think we need to pay attention. I mean, this motion can go forward. We can have the discussion in November. If people think that having this council, having the TMGC members divorce themselves from the negotiations is going to help. I think you're sadly mistaken. You know, there are certainly problems with this, and I suspect I speak for all the other TMGC members. If you think there's a better team, go ahead and find them. But it is a process that works. And if we go back into either no negotiation with the Canadians or no agreement, we will pay worse. Our fishermen and the fisheries will be worse off. And so I urge caution. I would be willing to work with council staff and the regional office staff to look at the arrangement and see if there have been spots where we failed. You know, the discussion about the overages is something that we should pay attention to, and to see what other problems we see in it, and then show that to the council and see what problems they identify before they take the step of forcing this to go to the State Department. So I hope people vote against this motion.
Rodney.
Not to take anything away from the TMGC team. I think they're doing a great job. It's not that. We're both following two sets of regulations. I've been through this in swordfish, where this country just sold its sword fishery right out the window and let the Japanese and everybody else just fish on our fishery. And now we don't have a viable sword fishery. So I don't want to take anything away from the team, but till we get the other side of this negotiation feet to the fire, like ours is, we go by our regulations. We go by our science information, and we adjust to that. And they're not. When they can just write off a 200 metric ton overcatch and just write it off, I don't think we're working under the same rules.
Rip.
Thank you. I agree with George's comments. I think that, and more to the point that Rodney made, our feet are being held to the fire on these issues. But if we walk away from this agreement, our feet are still going to be held to the fire, and the Canadians can fish at will with no real opportunity for us to dialogue with them on some of these issues. Do I think the agreement is great? No, I don't. But I think we need to do whatever. I think whatever emphasis we could put on it would be trying to make the agreement better rather than saying we want to abandon this and see if the Secretary of Commerce can negotiate something else. That'll take an awful long time. I think we ought to fix the devil we know.
Got three more people on the list. This is to put an item on the agenda for November, and it's off the agenda that we currently have. I mean, it's germane to the discussions we've been having, but I don't think we need a lot of debate as to whether or not we want to have a full discussion about it in November. Next, I have Tom Hill, then Dave Gaethel.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a strategic error to put this on the agenda. It's signaling to parties outside of the council process that we're not capable of having an informal dialogue with our neighbors and sorting out managerial issues and inviting into the discussion tent parties that this council has fought for 20 years to keep out. The last time we sent a major decision out of this council, it was negotiated with Canada and eventually ended up in the World Court, and I don't think there's anybody that's recovered from that decision. Haven't recovered yet. So I would encourage us to recognize, yeah, there are some wrinkles that we need to keep sorting out. I think the process is working exactly the way it's supposed to. We're responding to the fact that the Canadians basically weren't going to live up. David was absolutely correct until he mentioned it. I had forgotten there is a payback mechanism in the agreement. We need to be sure that it's complied with. We're uncomfortable because we're working at a very low potential target here on the yellowtail. That isn't their fault. That isn't a fault of the agreement. That's the science that is telling us that we've got a problem with a stock that we would have had to have dealt with regardless of whether we had a joint agreement with the Canadians. I just, with all due respect, and I understand David's frustration, but there may be other problems, but I would think that the council would not want to put on the agenda let's have the State Department fix this. That's inviting a lot of headaches that we don't deserve. I would encourage us to talk about having council members identify what the problems are that they see with the agreement and seeing if those can be sorted out by the TMGC. That's the right body. And we're just getting started, folks, and this is just working out the wrinkles in a process that, quite frankly, heretofore, it was one-sided. We had to do everything, and they did whatever they wanted, and we had to respond to it. We at least now have some sharing agreements where we actually know what the percentages are. That's a huge step forward. Before, they just caught what they wanted, and we had to respond. Forgive me for being passionate, but since I was involved in some of this stuff, I actually think we actually did a pretty good job. Is it perfect? Of course not. I haven't seen a fisheries management plan yet that's perfect.
Dave.
This motion is born out of frustration over the discussions we've had for the last several years since I've been here. We the things we can't discuss because we're just at a certain level in an agreement, to me, are more important to have formalized. I'm sorry, this is the way I feel. I feel pretty strongly about this. You know, I brought up mesh size a couple of years ago. Oh, we can't talk about that. Now we hear there's huge differences in twine tops. Oh, we can't talk about that. I don't mind negotiating with people, but I don't want to negotiate with one arm tied behind my back all the time. And from where I sit listening to these discussions, the last two times we've had them, that's what our TMGC is doing. They're sitting there like this going, okay, what are we going to get? What are we going to do? But we can't talk about the things that really need to be talked about because they're not on the list. And I don't know how else to force the issue. I have no problem with having it scheduled on the agenda. I understand we didn't have it up here today. But I think we've got to get this out. That we've got some problems here that need to be discussed. Now, whether it's giving the TMGC more authority in its negotiating stand to discuss things beyond quotas, maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know. But we've got a problem here, and it needs to be fixed.
Okay, I'm going to call the question, but before I do, I'm going to say that my opinion on this motion is that it presupposes we know the outcome of the discussion that we're going to have if we do put this on the agenda. And in fact, I think one thing that perhaps would be appropriate in place of this is to have a discussion about the TMGC's role in November. And also another thing about the TMGC, I've been on it for 2 years now. We don't meet outside of going to negotiate. And that's been brought up in the past. People that have observed how we behave and the council itself. We don't spend time learning about the agreement or the understanding. We don't understand the agreement perhaps as well as we should. Perhaps the TMGC itself needs to meet outside of a time when we're going to be taking action and negotiating. And I'll just put that to the council, but I am going to call the question. Well, the question is to put on the agenda in November that we request that the Secretary of Commerce require that the State Department arrange a formal agreement for management of transboundary stocks. All those in favor, raise your hand. 2. All those opposed? 12. Motion fails, 2-12. Is that, you want to be recognized or are you pointing to Dave?
I'm pointing to
Dave. John.
I want to go before him anyways. Mr. Chairman, so my sense is that you, your last comments were that you were going to have on the agenda a discussion about how the committee ought to be operating and where they feel that there might be some strengthening that might be required in their agreement. Is that we're going to have some discussion associated with that
Yeah, I've been keeping a running list over the past 2 days of things that the executive committee is going to take a look at. It keeps growing, but I think this is something that perhaps I can come up with a strategy with Paul and then introduce it to the XCOM, and we can announce it or discuss it at the council meeting.
I fully endorse the executive committee taking as much time as they need to discuss it.
Thank you.
The new committee, that is.
Dave Pierce.
All right. Well, the council has spoken. It's 12:50. That's the way we will proceed. I came out on the losing end of that. However, I still would like to know, and the industry would like to know, and I'm sure all council members would like to know what that means. Therefore, I would move, Mr. Chairman, that we task the scallop and groundfish plan development teams to evaluate the impact of a 1,250 metric ton Georges Bank yellowtail TAC on Georges Bank scallop and on Georges Bank groundfish and scallop fisheries. Because, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second to the motion?
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Seconded by Phil Rule.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Somebody needs to know. How can we live with ourselves if we don't at least know what this means? What are the implications for us? What are the implications for our next steps in groundfish management, for example? And, of course, scallops as well. The individuals in the audience have already pointed out the consequences they suspect will occur. I'd like to know as best I can be judged. That way, the National Marine Fisheries Service will also have the benefit of this information as it moves forward to potentially implement that 1,250 after, I assume, the discussions lead with the TMGC to a 1,250 metric ton TAC.
George.
At first, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for not finishing by 4:20. We should, I mean, regardless of whether it's 1250 or 1500, we know this is huge. And I'm not trying to downplay at all the economic impacts because I think they will be enormous. I am concerned that this morning we were talking about, was it this morning? This morning we were talking about keeping our focus on a scoping and a PDT, the process in groundfish, and that, in fact, this is our first chance to diverge from that focus and what that will do to our timeline, because, again, I'd like to know from somebody how much time they think it might take, because I'm concerned that, an economic impact analysis could take a lot of time away from working on the workshop, developing a scoping document, and moving the groundfish amendment process forward.
I think that's a fair question. I also, to the maker and seconder of the motion, I think you may want to consider adding to your motion or perfecting your motion to add, if we are actually going to get both PDTs together, to help us develop strategies to deal with what looks like low TACs of yellowtail for the next several years. We know it's not good, but perhaps they can put their collective heads together and help us or guide us with some strategies on how to best utilize it. Paul.
Tom, wouldn't Framework 42 have, if you read the economic impacts and impacts on other stocks, would it be similar to 1250?
No, I think the landing streams, the one in there for yellowtail, were not that low. I've got them with me. I could look them up. I looked them up a couple weeks ago, and as I recall, just to see if they were in the same ballpark, I don't think they were close. I think the when we did the major change model estimates last year, we were coming up with a TAC of something on the order of 1,500 or 1,800 tons, which is, you know, considerably higher than the 1,250.
George Darcy.
Just so everyone is aware, Doug just reminded me that the regulations require a council recommendation on these stacks by October 31st of each year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to follow up on George's comment. His was concerning the groundfish PDT. The scallop PDT is working on Amendment 11. There's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 and some different potential alternatives to look at. So there's going to be not going to be a lot of time for people to do this analysis.
Paul.
In response to George's point about the recommendation, I think we ought to send a letter to the service with what went on here and say this is our initial recommendation. You'll get our final one in November.
Any objection to that recommendation? Okay, I'm going to call the question. Task scallop and groundfish PDTs to evaluate the impacts of 1,250 metric ton Georges Bank yellowtail attack on Georges Bank groundfish and scallop fisheries. All those in favor, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Motion fails 6-8. Anything else, George? Tom, did you want to weigh in on something?
I'll wait for Mr. LaPointe.
Mr. LaPointe.
The TMGC also addressed the scientific folks addressed for us the question of size composition in the U.S. and Canada fisheries. And without getting into that report, they found differences that were at most nominal. Has that report been given to council members? And if it has been, I see people shaking their head yes. And so I would encourage people to look that through. And again, in this, if people have questions or concerns about that, to relay them to staff or myself as chair of the TMGC. That, Mr. Chairman, concludes my 420 report.
Tom.
If Karen could scroll back to the motion on COD, and the reason I'm asking this is because something keep going. I think it's like 6 or 7. Keep going. Must be 5. I guess the point here is I think the council was concerned that the Canadians didn't get penalized for the overage. Is that accurate? Was the council questioning the overall TAC? Because in relation to what Paul's saying, if the council was not questioning the overall TAC of 1,900 metric tons, then we could forward the haddock and cod TACs to the service now, and they'd get them by October 31st.
Yep. Rodney.
My concern wasn't the tax. My concern was there was nothing done about the overage. That was my concern.
Yeah, the discussion focused around compensating or taking action on the overage.
I should have kept my mouth shut because I guess if we forward the 1,900-ton TAC, it ties the TMGC's hands on how they deal with the overage with the Canadians. So maybe it's best to leave the motion as it stands.
Is that what you were going to say, John? Okay.
That is, Mr. Chairman. I think you have to send it back and agree that that's the TAC, and then subtract whatever overage the Canadians had from their share. And then that's the agreement that then goes back to the council and forwarded on to the service.
Okay. Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm going to hate myself in the morning. But I'm going to suggest that maybe that, judging by what you said before, Mr. Chairman, and what my couple of years at this process, that TMGC meet before we meet with the Canadians, and maybe meet with the service
the people from TMGC and have a good sit down so we get a lot better understanding of the actual agreement and where we want to go.
Okay, we'll look to see if we can't work that into the timing. Okay. Thank you. We're 50 minutes behind schedule. So people want to take a five-minute break before we get into the standardized bycatch, or do you want to go right into standardized bycatch? You need 5 minutes to set up? All right, that answers the question. 5-minute break.